I used to work in Little Rock, Arkansas, at the Episcopal Cathedral there. Little Rock is Arkansas's capital and home to the parade of performative politicians with the God, grits, guns flavor of party line. In 2015, the Assembly voted to erect a monument of the Ten Commandments on the Capitol grounds. On June 27th, 2017, the monument was installed, and in the early morning hours of June 28th, a man named Michael Tate Reed drove his car onto the grounds, accelerated to some speed, and slammed into the 6,000-pound granite monument, destroying it. And that is how I came to know of a man who broke all 10 commandments in about 10 seconds. This is not a sermon about the separation of church and state, though I'm sure you can deduce from my mirth where I land on the issue. I do think that the Ten Commandments are important for us as Christians. I do not think that the state capitol is the ground for teaching on their importance. It's here. I don't know how much thought you've even given the Decalogue, honestly. We said all of those commandments together last week during the service, but they've disappeared from regular use in Anglican worship in about the past 100 years or so. In fact, I mentioned this at one of our Ask Me Anything sessions in between the services that we've been having. Had you attended a Protestant church like ours in the 18th and 19th centuries, you largely would not have seen any adornment on the walls at all. One of the thrusts in the Protestant Reformation was correcting the Roman Catholic emphasis on imagery, on the material, which the Reformers viewed as idolatry. So you wouldn't have seen crosses, statuary, icons, anything that would have been viewed as the physical target of prayer and worship. Makes sense, right? Even the Eucharist was not practiced regularly and would not have been kept in reserve like we do, lest you be confused into worshiping material things. What you would have seen on the walls of any church at that time were two things: the Apostles' Creed and the Ten Commandments. And they would have been recited at every service of worship. You would know them by heart, the same way you know the Lord's Prayer by heart. If you haven't spent any time with them lately, the Ten Commandments are a very simple distillation of God's law and purposes for us. There's one God who liberates you from the ways of the world. Do not misuse the name of that God. Do not make an idol of God, or anything else for that matter. Remember the Sabbath, mark it, set it aside. We give 1/10, a tithe of our earnings, but we are asked to give much more, 1/7 of our time. Honor your parents. Do not forget the elderly. Do not murder. Do not steal. Do not commit adultery. Do not bear false witness against your neighbor. Don't degrade them with your mouth. And do not covet what your neighbor has. Stop comparing yourself to them. Simple and universally foundational to Jews and Christians. If you missed last week, I spent the whole sermon talking about Paul and the law and how the law was like a kind of scaffold supposed to make a kind of people and a kind of society that God had in mind in our creation, one that's loving and just and equitable. But the law had become an idol in itself because we constantly break that second commandment and trust things to do what only God can do. But it doesn't mean that the law was wrong. And there's so much more to these commandments than just 10 thou shalt nots. For instance, the fourth commandment tells us to remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. So it's posed positively. And then it commands in the negative, don't work right? Do this, don't do that. And John Calvin says to do this with all of the commandments, even if it's not spelled out for you. Consider how these commandments are posed to you, both positively and negatively. Don't just consider the base meaning, but the intent. If it says one thing displeases God, then there's an opposite that pleases God. Don't murder means don't murder, but it also has an opposite good. It requires that we give our neighbor's life all the help we can. It's not just do no harm. It asks you to consider why you will not do harm. And the answer is because that person's life is dear and precious to us and worth our work towards the good. Martin Luther takes the same tack. For instance, he says, the commandment against false witness means don't harm your neighbor with your words. Don't do that. But it also has a positive command. Rather, he explains, we should use our tongue to speak only the best about all people, to cover the sins and infirmities of our neighbors, to justify their actions, and to cloak and veil them with our own honor. René Girard, a modern interpreter, says these commandments are more than just a guide to living a holy life. They are entirely devoted to one ideal, prohibiting violence against our neighbor. You shall not kill, commit adultery, steal, bear false witness. He says that the 10th commandment, you shall not covet, is the most important of all. And actually, biblical scholars agree with him on the numerology. When you're given a list, just for your information, when you're given a list of 10 things in the Bible, it's that last thing on the list that you've got to be looking at in particular. So, right, the 10 plagues of Egypt, for example, they're grouped in groupings of 3 and 3 and 3, and it's that last one, the monumental 10th plague, which matters, that the story turns on. And Girard's right, the 10th commandment is the most unique. All the other commandments come down to this one. Instead of prohibiting an action, it forbids a desire, Girard says. You shall not desire the house of your neighbor, the wife of your neighbor, anything that belongs to your neighbor. This desire, in comparison, is the root of our conflict. And everyone has this conflict within ourselves. Girard points out that this view is in opposition to the one assumed by the social sciences. The social sciences regard peace and mental health as the normal state and conflict as something accidental. Girard believes that conflict is our normal state. And that at every level, when a human society struggles with scarcity or tension, there is a tendency to resolve this stress by scapegoating individuals or groups. I'm sure lots of examples are coming to mind on scales great and small for you. We feel better when we solve our problems by blaming someone else. This is a part of who we are as human beings. What I'm saying is that I may not have broken all 10 commandments in 10 seconds, but I do know that following these commandments is harder than their simple format belies. They have plenty to teach us. It's the season of Lent. Maybe you could try memorizing them as a part of your Lenten discipline. Because the point of having them on the church walls was to get them into your hearts, into your homes, to make you ask why the prohibition against murder and the prohibition against work on the Sabbath are on an equal level, to make you consider the idols you have built, what gods you serve, to pinpoint that root of conflict in comparison, and to have your heart instinctively respond, do not covet, even as you do. It's the law that pierces the wall of blame and obfuscation and pride around our hearts. It's only there, in that tender wound of realization, where grace starts to get through.